Every business faces challenges. Whether you need more space, a better location, or a little more curb appeal, a realtor, a member of the National Association of Realtors, can help you find the right place to grow. So get what your business needs. Get Realtor.
This is Your Money Matters from the Wall Street Journal.
Welcome to Your Money Matters. I'm J.R. Whalen with Anne-Marie Fertoli in New York. To say that Bitcoin has had a volatile November would be putting it lightly. After its value raced up to nearly $8,000 in recent weeks, the cryptocurrency lost more than 25% in days up to and including the second weekend of the month. Has Bitcoin seen its day in the sun come and go? Well, Wall Street Journal cryptocurrency reporter Paul Vigna joins us to discuss. So, Paul, let's just bring everybody up to speed for just a moment on exactly what Bitcoin is.
Sure. Bitcoin is a digital currency that was launched about 9 years ago. And the real difference between Bitcoin and currencies that we're all used to is that the monetary systems we're all used to are maintained and backed by the government. Bitcoin is not. Bitcoin is basically a computer system that has a series of incentives built in for people to maintain it on their own. And what you end up with is basically a peer-to-peer network for exchanging value between, well, peer-to-peer.
Paul, I guess it's not a surprise that Bitcoin pulled back after such a dramatic run-up, but did a 25% pullback surprise you?
No. A 25% pullback for Bitcoin can happen in a morning for absolutely no reason. I mean, I think the thing people have to keep in mind with Bitcoin is that this is still a relatively thin market. It is still a relatively new market. It does not have any of the kinds of circuit breakers or hedges in built in that traditional markets have. So it is a much more volatile market. It can move up and down much more. I mean, 25% for the S&P 500 in a day would be historic. Has never actually happened. I mean, in 87, I think it was a 22% drop for the S&P. For Bitcoin, that is just that's not an unusual move in 4 days. It really isn't. So,
right. It's the fifth time this year something like that's happened.
Yes, exactly. Right. I mean, Bitcoin moves up and down like this a lot. So, no. And especially given that it was up, I think it was 700 or 800% at the top when it was close to 8,000. So, no, it was not an unusual move.
And, you know, Paul, we're kind of still in the Wild West when it comes to digital currency like Bitcoin. It's essentially open source software and volunteer developers and, like you said, a peer-to-peer network. More regulation, it seems, might be coming down the road. But what do you think might speed that up?
Well, I think what's going to come down the road as fast, if not faster, than regulation is an expansion of the market. And what you're seeing in financial services is an increasing interest in this asset that is going up at such a rate. So you're starting to see companies that are hearing from their clients, they're saying, what is Bitcoin? Should I buy Bitcoin? Should I hold Bitcoin? So you're starting to see interest from Wall Street in building out products that can tap into this market. On the other end, and this is a pretty important development this year, in Japan, they put in some rules and regulations around Bitcoin and Bitcoin businesses, and that has spurred a lot of trading and a lot of experimenting. So you're starting to see on the financial services side, you're starting to see interest. On the regulatory side, like you said, JR, you're starting to see interest. And what that should lead to is increased interest or at least access among consumers. And that's kind of the big cycle that we're in right now is consumers, financial services, regulators, you know, all kind of coming in one big swoop. So that's what you're looking at right now.
And China spooked the market also.
Yes. China has been, over the last 12 months or so, increasingly cracking down on Bitcoin. They kind of allowed it to exist for a long time. They were not taking much of an interest in it. Now they have. They put the clamps on their exchanges. They put their clamps on a new fundraising method that's related to Bitcoin called the initial coin offering. Companies are creating Bitcoin-like tokens and offering mm-hmm. them up for sale. China cracked down on that. So China, which about a year ago represented north of 90% of all Bitcoin trading volume, now is virtually, I don't know offhand what it is, but it's no more than fourth or fifth largest now. I mean, China has really put the clamps down. But all that has really done has driven that activity to other countries. Japan and South Korea especially have become huge markets for Bitcoin now.
Paul, in the days since the most recent drop, Bitcoin's value recovered somewhat, but there are still some major points of uncertainty that are sparking concern. For one, plans to split Bitcoin were suspended.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain what exactly happened there?
Sure. What's happening now in Bitcoin is that it has grown to the point where you have different people within the industry who have different visions of what Bitcoin should be. And they've been arguing for the past couple of years about that. What has happened is that it has become such a sort of personal fight between these groups that they're at the point where they really just they cannot agree on a common vision of Bitcoin anymore. So you had earlier this year a small, really like a splinter group of Bitcoin dissidents who took the software because, like we said, Bitcoin is open source software. Anybody can take that code, reconfigure it to their own specifications, their own desires, and launch it as a separate program. So you had a group of Bitcoin dissidents. They did that. They called it Bitcoin Cash, and they launched it in August. You had another group that was ready to split Bitcoin itself, and that was supposed to happen this November. There was an agreement to do that, but then the agreement broke down. So the two sides again were fighting, and one side backed down. So you didn't get a split of Bitcoin itself. But what happened is that dissident group that was ready to split Bitcoin started to trade this other version of Bitcoin, this Bitcoin Cash. So over the weekend, you had this huge run-up in Bitcoin Cash. At one point, the value had quadrupled, and you had a fall in Bitcoin. And what you're seeing is in the market, you're basically seeing this push and pull between these two different groups. One wants Bitcoin to be a payments network, to be kind of a competitor, Visa, MasterCard, PayPal, any of those. The other wants Bitcoin to move slower and to be more of sort of a place where you will park your assets, park your value, a store of value, kind of like a digital gold. So essentially what you have is a fight between these two groups, the one that wants Bitcoin to be a payment system and the one that wants Bitcoin to be gold. And everything we're talking about right now with the price moves and everything is really these two sides pushing and pulling against each other.
What's really unsettling for a lot of people, I think, is that, yes, it could be a payment system. And yes, it gets a form of currency. But it's currency that changes value. A dollar bill in your pocket is always worth a dollar. But a 25% drop, that's got to be really unsettling.
I mean, a Bitcoin is always a Bitcoin. It's just, what is it trading against? I mean, the dollar changes in value against the euro, against the yen. Bitcoin does the same thing against the dollar.
Okay,
I mean,
one
Bitcoin in my digital wallet is still one Bitcoin. It's just a matter of what will the market pay for it in terms of dollars. But your point is well taken. I mean, Bitcoin as a currency is still something in its infancy. It is still, like you said, it's very volatile. So it is an issue in terms of whether this can actually operate as a currency that we're used to.
We're speaking with the Wall Street Journal's Paul Vigna on the recent Bitcoin price swings, and you're listening to Your Money Matters from the Wall Street Journal.
You've heard it a million times. Location, location, location. Well, that's because location's important, and it's the reason this ad, targeted at you, isn't located before a podcast about the history of ice dancing. If you own a business, you know the importance of location, which is why you need a realtor. A member of the National Association of Realtors, a real estate expert who can help you find the perfect location to grow. So get what your business needs. Get Realtor.
Journal.
Welcome back, everybody. Credit Suisse's CEO uttered the B word recently in regards to Bitcoin, and that's raising concern that it is possibly in one of the biggest financial bubbles of all time. That may have recently scared people, but it's also been a concern for a while.
Well, it's also probably the fourth or fifth major bubble Bitcoin has been in. I mean, again, you have to keep in mind that this is, relatively speaking, a very new asset. It is a very raw market. It is not a very large market overall compared to other assets. So is it in a bubble? Yeah, it's probably in a bubble. And you look at the percentages and they look outrageous. But In absolute terms of the size of this market compared to anything else, I mean, the largest bubble of all time, there's no doubt it was either the dot-com bubble or the housing bubble. I mean, those were, in terms of the number of people involved, the money that was involved, those were much, much larger than Bitcoin. I mean, Bitcoin itself has $100 billion market value. All the Bitcoin that's out there, if you were able to liquidate it right now, it would equal about $100 billion. that is a fraction of what the housing bubble was at its height, a fraction of what the stock market was at the height of the dot-com. So, yes, Bitcoin has these crazy moves and the volatility, and everyone says it's a bubble, and it's still hard to figure out how much of this—no, it's not hard to figure out, I shouldn't say. Most of this is still speculative buying. It's people betting Bitcoin is going to become something in the future. So, yes, it is a lot of speculative buying and a lot of enthusiastic buying, not based on a lot of fundamentals. So in that sense, you can say it's a bubble, but it's still, it's very small compared to any other financial bubble in history.
And speaking of betting on it and the changes and such, something that's adding to the volatility is the idea of possibly creating Bitcoin futures that can be traded. Do you think that's going to happen?
That's going to happen. I mean, that is absolutely. And what's interesting about it is there are Bitcoin exchanges that exist that will do that for you, futures. But now we're talking about the CME Group starting to trade Bitcoin futures. We're talking about CBOE doing futures contracts. I mean, you're talking about traditional financial players starting to create derivatives products for Bitcoin trading. That is what is really interesting. That is what could bring in some institutional money, some traditional money into the market. And while Bitcoiners think, oh, my God, that just means that there's going to be more money coming in and we're going to go to the moon, is what they love to say, to the moon. You know, I think it could actually end up tamping some of the volatility and some of the insane price moves. I mean, because you will, for the first time, you will give people the opportunity to actually bet against Bitcoin. It's been very difficult to bet against Bitcoin in any kind of large sense. Now it will become easier and you'll have more sophisticated players coming into this market. So that is going to happen. And when that happens, it will be very, very interesting to see what it really does do in terms of Bitcoin's prices.
I want to ask you about another potential audience for Bitcoin. I'm in what's considered the millennial age group at the very tail end, and we sort of think of that group on the cutting edge of technology. But I can think of members of my own peer group who, if you ask them what exactly Bitcoin is, don't quite understand that. How is Bitcoin in sort of developing its brand, reaching out to that audience?
This is the thing. Bitcoin as a brand doesn't really exist. There's no company pushing Bitcoin. There's no marketing team behind Bitcoin to kind of get consumer awareness out there to promote it as a product, as something you should use. You're not going to see Bitcoin commercials. So the issue that it's funny because the issue you're talking about in your generation, I'm seeing in my generation. You know, I'm a Gen Xer. Mm-hmm. And there are people I know who know about Bitcoin. And there are people I know, and I was just at an event for my son's school, and I was talking to a couple of parents who were my generation. They'd never heard of Bitcoin. They had no idea what it was. So we were talking about what I do for a living and what, you know. And when I mentioned Bitcoin, they had absolutely no idea what it was. So the way Bitcoin is going to grow is going to be completely viral because there is nobody pushing Bitcoin. So it is literally just going to be a viral thing. It's going to be more people that pick it up and use it and either like it or don't like it and start recommending it to their friends and talking about it online. That's how it's grown, and that is how it's going to continue to grow.
All right. Certainly hearing a lot more about it these days, especially.
Well, yes. I mean, this year, I think 3 or 4 years ago, it was still at a point where really, most people had not heard of it. Maybe 75% of the population had not even heard of it. I bet that number is down now. Maybe it's less than half. More people have heard of it, but not as many as you would think, although the hype this year has been really off the charts because the price has been up so much. So more people, but you still – Bitcoin's potential market, I guess, mm-hmm. is still growing.
So it's here to stay. Virtual currency is not going away.
I don't believe so, no. I mean, I think that the technology behind it is really promising, and it actually does do some really good things. I mean, the idea that you can move money anywhere around the globe as fast as you can send an email is an unbelievably enticing prospect for the global economy. And whatever the particulars are, figuring out how to build Bitcoin exactly to make that work on a large scale, or some other digital currency, or even a government-backed digital currency, somebody is going to do that. This technology has way too much potential for it to fade away.
So there's no way going forward to just rest on the check is in the mail, because the capability is there to send it instantly.
Right. Yeah. What you're going to have to say is that the check is caught in your spam filter.
Check your spam folder.
Yeah.
By the way, you have written several books on Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. What's the latest book?
Well, the first book was called The Age of Cryptocurrency. That came out in 2015. The next book that my co-author, Mike Casey, and I are working on is going to be called The Truth Machine, and that's coming out in February.
All right. Fantastic. We're speaking with The Wall Street Journal's Paul Vigna about the swings and volatility and the new brave world of Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. Paul, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, JR. Thanks for having me.
And thank you for listening to Your Money Matters. I'm JR Whalen with Anne-Marie Fertoli in New York.
Is Alexa part of your life? Then make Your Money Matters part of your flash briefing on the Amazon Echo. The Wall Street Journal. Listen ambitiously.